I'm the Bunny Man.
And I'm Crazy Susie.
And we are the Eyes of Terror.
You're such a dork.
I know. So tonight's movie we're going to review is Soul Tangler.
No, it's THE Soul Tangler.
Yeah, or THE Soul Tangler, homie. It was made in 1987. Not released in 2014.
Yep, it was released to DVD in 2014. Wow, that was a long time.
Not just DVD, but also VHS.
It's a long time to wait for a movie, man. Long time.
Yes. So let's go into our...
It is not actually... It has no rating. You know, PG-13, rated R. It doesn't have one. It's not rated. And IMDb, get those jumbled up.
Well, I mean, let's give a rating to it just in case. If you have kids, I would give it a PG-13 rating.
Yeah, there's no nudity, but it does have quite a bit of gore in it. So, yeah, probably PG-13 would be safe. Mm-hmm. And IMDb gives it a 4.5 out of 10. And there is no rating scale on Rotten Tomatoes. I guess they haven't viewed it.
Yeah. There's actually nothing except for the title in Rotten Tomatoes.
Right.
Not a thing.
We watched it on our Amazon account. We have the Shudder account through Amazon, which is basically just a horror type bundle you can get through Amazon Prime. It's an extra, not even $5 a month. And as you know, we are... into the horror, so we opted to get that.
And it's totally worth it. And once again, we are not sponsored by either Amazon nor Shudder. But if you are Amazon or Shudder, hey, we're here.
Hook us up, man. Hook us up. It is an hour and 30 minutes long. And as I was saying before, the director is Pat Bishow. The writers were John Bishow and Lance Lorre. The cast is many. The ones that I have names for, I'll let you know in just a moment. I did go on IMDb, and look up the cast, because I always like to let you guys know who is actually who. You know, the lead is paid by this person, and yada yada yada. They don't really break it down that way. They say lead zombie and lead zombie and this, that, and the other. And how the movie is done, you don't really notice that there's a lead with the zombie. So that's really a head scratcher right there. So we're not going to break it down that in depth.
Well, the whole IMDb entry is confusing as all heck anyway. So,
unfortunately, we can't be that clear with this movie, and I do apologize for that, but we can give you the names. There aren't really any that really stand out, so this is really one of those B-raters.
This is a very obscure film. Now, a little bit more backstory. It is shot in 16mm, and it was released in 2014, like we said, by Mondo and Bleeding Skull. And that's actually where they started really publishing it. And the interesting thing about, I think, Bleeding Skull, and there was another company that was in, they had a special disc VHS for what they call tape heads. So...
Is that the bright neon yellow one?
That's the bright neon yellow tape.
Oh, yeah.
And
I've seen it on their website. The VHS tape is literally like neon yellow. I'm sure you could open it from the jacket in the dark, and you would not lose it, because it is like, whoa, yellow.
And the price, if you're interested, is $25 for the special edition VHS, and it comes with a small, like, poster and the VHS. There's also, if you really want to have a hard copy, which I think someday, if we get the money for it, I think I wouldn't mind adding it to our collection, for $15.
Actually, I think I saw on another website where the DVD was $12, but it's pretty, I mean... I don't think it's a special edition. It's just the basic DVD. So it depends on if you're like us and you prefer special editions, you know, because it does come with extra material and typically a poster or some kind of novelty. Then it is worth paying a couple extra bucks. So
so you want to go continue into the great IMDb cluster Screw. Yeah.
Unfortunately, like I said, I'm not able to break it down to let you know who the main person is, because it doesn't even give photos when you click on the cast members, so it's pretty confusing.
Well, I think the best part for you was the synopsis.
The synopsis is pretty awesome too. We will get into that. That is a whole different story for me. I'm a literature major, and I know I sound like a hick, and I'm from the South, and I apologize for that. I don't always pronounce things in the best way. My Southern accent does not allow me to do so, and it's quite comical, but the verbiage that is used in one of the synopses is just wow. We'll get to that. The cast are Bill Bernhard, Jennifer Brown, Tom Sericchio, I hope I pronounced that correctly, Barry DeVox, Jane Kinzer, Louise Millman.
Okay, and if you hear any ambient noises, it's because, like I said before, if you didn't catch it, is because of our mic. We do live in an apartment complex, and we have kids who decide that they're going to run up and down our hallway only. Only our hallway.
Yeah, our mic picks up quite a bit, and we do have a very large dog, and she does not enjoy us recording, and that's when she tries to be naughty, so hopefully she'll behave today.
Hopefully we
can. There's no guarantees.
We're hoping to remedy the situation by adding some sort of box with the sound so it doesn't pick up as much. But right now, this is what we're dealing with. But let's continue.
Okay. It is produced by Paula Waldowski. Very interesting name. Music by...
It looks like Hypno Love Wheel.
We can't make this stuff up, y'all.
Although that is a great name. If I was ever going to start a band, it's going to be Hypno Love Wheels.
Hypno Love Wheels. Gotta have more than wheels, man. Okay, the budget. Nobody had listed a budget, so we have no clue what their budget was like, you know.
We could estimate that it was a shoestring budget.
I'm pretty sure it was, because they didn't use a whole lot of fancy things. I mean, there really wasn't a whole lot going on as far as the scenes go. I mean, there was quite a bit of equipment in the laboratory where he was doing his tests and everything, but I seriously don't think there was a huge, huge budget.
And the quote-unquote effects were very cheaply made. And that...
Yeah, there was really no special effects. You know, they used quite a bit of gore and makeup and things like that, but I don't think it was anything, like, super major. The cinematography was also done by Pat Bichow, which is the director, and so...
Pretty
talented person if they're doing a little bit of everything.
And I think that instead of using a crane like they do in new movies, I'm pretty sure when they're driving down the road and you see they're showing the car, mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure the guy's actually in another car. Because it just looks like that. You know, it just...
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's nothing fancy, but I enjoyed a lot of the aspects of the movie, and the ending was really, really awesome. The one thing I didn't enjoy was at the very beginning, and there were another part in the movie where the background music was so loud, it superseded what the main actor was trying to say, and you couldn't even hear what he was trying to say. In the very beginning, this happened. The background music was so obnoxiously loud. Mm-hmm. He was trying to explain what he was working on, what his project was, and you couldn't hear but maybe five words of the entire
dialogue.
4 or 5 minute clip of that scene, and we had to turn our sound bar almost all the way up and blow out my eardrums to hear it, and I was like, I didn't even understand most of what he said, and we had to listen to it several times to even try to comprehend as to what was going on. That I don't enjoy. I understand the background music sets the mood, and I understand what they were going for, but it didn't need to be that loud.
Okay, so if you're listening to these on headphones, I would not.
No. You will hurt yourself.
Yeah.
You will blow your eardrums out.
So let's get into it. You want to read
the synopsis? I'll go into the... It's a mess. Okay, the one we found on IMDb, this is the first one. A mad scientist named Anton Lupesky invents a drug that can free the soul of its user and allow them to possess the bodies of corpses. The horrible side effect is sometimes fatal hallucinations that leave the survivors incurably mad. Okay, fatal hallucinations that leave the survivors incurably mad.
And as I was, and I was joking,
that makes my brain hurt.
With Crazy Susie, it's like, can you imagine a medication, you know, sometimes fatal, and that's it.
It doesn't say. I mean, sometimes fatal hallucinations that leaves the survivors incurably mad.
But when you're watching the film, you're like, hallucinations are a small part of what is going on with that drug.
Right.
So... Even
there's,
the synopsis,
there's only been two people in the whole movie that survived the medication.
So, yeah. So, but let's get into it. So we start out with some really awesome rock band pipes. I mean,
the music they chose is great.
I love it.
But it took over. You know, yeah. It took over. Okay. The movie starts out with the doctor shooting himself up. And, you know, all great movies start out with people getting high. I'm not saying I get high, but the movie started out with him getting high. And it just looked like to me he was shooting up B12. I only said that because I have to take B12 injections, and that's what it looked like to me. And I'm thinking, that's not going to do nothing for you, dude. This might make you feel better if your B12 is low. But
hey, do you have any more of that shun liquid?
So it starts out with Dr., I call him Anton because saying his last name 1,500 times is not going to be fun for me. So Dr. Anton's shooting up drugs and talking about he is the only one who has been able to withstand this powerful drug. And the other people he has administered to have gone crazy and then died or have just died because their weakling little minds couldn't handle the superiority of this drug. And he's so smart and this drug expands his mind and all this craziness.
Or if you're just listening to it for the first time and not trying to actually understand what's going on, it sounds more like this. Start, shoot, power, drug, experimental, dead.
Yeah. That's pretty much all you understand from it because of the background music is atrociously, aggressively loud. It's wonderful music. I love it. It's awesome. The soundtrack is great, but you can't understand what the hell anybody's saying over it.
And the colors are interesting. I mean, the colors are very vibrant for this film. A lot of reds.
Well, red, orange, and yellows. Yes. Their color theme is very bright. Okay, so the doctor works for an institute, and that's where he does his experiments and everything, and that's how he's formulated this drug. Well, they're talking about closing the institute because there's been a lot of deaths, accidental deaths and things surrounding this doctor. He ends up going to court over it. He's found not guilty. They close down the institute. So he decides that he's going to start practicing overseas because there's too much scrutiny. And he has too many limitations in the U.S.
Well, they're saying that he went over to Berlin. And because there's less freedoms, he didn't want anybody to tell him what he could and could not do.
Right. He wanted more medical liberties, you know, to be able to practice and experiment. He felt like he was under too much restraint in the U.S. with his as far as experimentations. So he leaves, and there was a daughter of one of his patients that...
Well, let's go... I think that that's the first, is trying to establish a timeline. Trying to establish a timeline, I think, is one of, like... So he hears the trial.
Mm-hmm.
He gets on a plane.
Yeah.
Comes back. What is that? 5 hours later type thing. You know, it's... Yeah.
It's strange because when he comes back, some people in the situation make it seem like it was a short period of time, and other people that have been close to him make it seem like it's been years, like several years, like 7 or 8 years. And other people make it seem like it's been
a fortnight.
5 days, you know?
Yeah, so...
Well, you find out there is a daughter of one of Dr. Anton's patients that's been searching for him because she has gotten letters from her dad while her dad was under his care that he was crazy, that he was experimenting on the patients at the institute, and he was doing horrible things to these mentally ill patients, and he was experimenting on them, and he killed some of them, and he's just a very crazy, dangerous man, and... this woman's father had died at the institute, and so you find out that this lady, who's actually a reporter for the local newspaper, is trying to find this doctor because, you know, her father's died. She thinks this doctor's connected to his death because of these letters, and she's trying to find this doctor to try to get down to the bottom of what happened to her dad.
But the newspaper is not really a newspaper, though. As the guy, the lead guy, who's the generic newspaper boss, angry guy. He's like, this is a rag. Why do you not care? Type thing. You know, he's like, do rag stories. Don't do legitimate stories.
Yeah, the lead guy on the newspaper is more into this being a tabloid type newspaper and not really legitimate news.
Like, what happened to Batboy?
So he doesn't really care what she has to say about what happened to her dad or about this doctor. He's like, that's not real news. We want to know about stuff that's not real news, you know.
Batboy! We want more Batboy!
So Dr. Anton returns to the U.S. and he says he does it. He left being overseas because the U.S. has superior equipment and, you know... That was his excuse for coming back. You know, we have superior equipment here. I'm able to do my experiments more easily here. I guess things didn't go so well.
And then that's where we just leave off that whole thing. Like, what happened over in Europe?
That's really all his explanation that was given. He didn't go into any kind of details or whatever. So he gets back with his old staff, his nurse.
Oh, that nurse. That nurse, she wanted the D.
Yeah, his nurse has got the hots for him like there ain't no tomorrow. She would lick his toenails off if she had the chance. Like, she would do anything for him. He says, Jessica, will you do this? Yes, doctor, I'll get right on that.
I mean, she's just missing the drool at that point, you know?
I mean, she's all about doing whatever the doctor says, and he has an assistant. His name is Carl, and so Jessica and Carl go around town and collect people.
Yeah, but in, like, the stupidest way humanly possible.
In the weirdest child molester van way possible. So Jessica drives and Carl gets in the passenger seat.
Well, no, Carl does his best impersonation of the Zodiac Killer with a hammer.
Yeah, Carl puts on a potato cloth hood. They drive up to just random people. Carl gets out, knocks them upside the head with a hammer, and throws them in the van and goes to the next person like they're trick-or-treating for people.
Yeah.
Hello. Get in.
No, or better yet, keeping with the trick-or-treat. Trick-or-treat. Clunk. Taking your girl.
Yeah. They just drive around looking mostly for women because the doctor wants young, healthy women. They just drive around until they find a chick that looks right. Pull over. Knock them upside the head. Put them in the back of the van. Go to the next one.
Yeah.
And we're like, what just happened?
Well, and you don't really realize who it is, who's the hooded figure at first.
Right.
Because you even brought that up, you're like, who is that? And then you realize through the gene. So it doesn't even explain what sort of the motivation. It's just, it's sort of like the doctor comes back, and then next is hooded guy hitting people with hammer.
Right. Before they leave, Carl was asleep in one of the beds, I guess, at the doctor's house. And Jessica's waking him up, and she's like, we gotta go. We gotta go do this for the doctor. You heard the doctor. We gotta go now. And he's wearing these stonewashed, kind of ripped-up jeans, and they're pretty recognizable. I mean, because of the color and how they're torn and everything. And then the next thing you see is this brown, older van going down the road. A hooded figure in those jeans get out. You see a hammer swing, and you see this chick being dragged with blood on her head. And you're like, did I miss something? And then you just see them doing that multiple times. Knock, knock, knock on the head. Body dragged. Van moving again. Oh, hello, how are you? Drag the body again. It's like, okay, they got a van, but only so many bodies are going to fit in that van. We got to make a pit stop and not drop these bodies off and go back for more.
And if you're wondering what the costumes look like in this movie, the best way to describe them is the 80s completely threw up all over this film.
Yeah, well, it was produced in the 80s.
Well, it was, but I mean, have you ever watched 80 films and they're like the higher up clothing, 80s yeah. clothing? No, this is like the lower end 80s clothing.
This is Goodwill establishment clothing.
Yeah. And the hair, the big old hair, the everything that is 80s is in this movie. The van is your typical 80s van.
So yeah, they're driving around and getting random people for the doctor. Kim, who is the daughter of the patient that we talked about, is having nightmares about a dead preacher and being kidnapped. And I'm never really understand. The preacher is like a zombie type guy dressed in preacher attire. And Kim is a writer, like we said, for the local newspaper. And she wants to write a piece about the hospital and her dad, who was a patient there and died there. And the doctor starts performing his experiments again. And we get to see him do his soul tangling thing, which basically, like we said before, is where he can, if he has a fresh corpse, you know, somebody that was freshly killed.
But again, that's loose. Let's say fresh is a very loose term in this movie.
Yeah. Because yeah. Once he gets in his groove, it don't matter how fresh they are. Ew. So he starts experimenting again. And Kim talks to her local police officer friend, or police officer in training, about the local people who have gone missing. He said the doctor is a suspect and possibly a devil worshiper. Who knows? Dr. Anton continues to refine his soul-tangling techniques. You know, he keeps experimenting on these women and seeing what all he can do and not do, I guess.
But you really don't see, like, the full extent of the experiments. All you see is that woman on gurney being shot up with drugs, and that's it.
Right. You don't really see his full talents with it until the end of the movie. The doctor reflects on his meeting with the board members from the hospital.
And to me, that was a very awkward scene on top of it, because they looked like they were having a discussion, but they weren't having a discussion. It was this very surreal, like,
yeah,
meeting.
He had met with this lady named Janet, and she was on the head of the board with the institute that he worked for, and she was the one that told him that they were going to stop his funding, he was going to be fired, he needed to leave, and all that, before they had actually taken him to court before he lost his job. And he had invited her to his house before this whole thing happened, and he was just like remembering back when they had that meeting, and he had served her champagne and was making her dinner and all this stuff, and he was trying to explain to her how the soul tangling thing worked and his philosophies and all that, and she was like, you're just crazy, and you know, the institute can't support this kind of ideals, and we want you out no later than tomorrow, and all of this.
But I wasn't talking, I mean that part, okay. I was talking the way it was shot.
The way it was shot, it didn't look like either of them were actually talking. Their mouths weren't moving.
Yeah, they were staring at each other, and you're sort of like, okay, what is this? You realize it's this meeting that they're having, and it's in retrospect.
Mm-hmm.
From both parties at the same time, and they're adding the audio on top of it. So, right. You know, and you're just like, what is going on here?
Yeah, because it's like a daydream. It's just him recollecting what happened. he's upset and angry about it because he had, like, the perfect situation. You know, he had random people that were patients there that he could experiment on, and he didn't have to rely on goons to go finding people.
Yeah.
He had, like, the perfect setup, and this lady screwed it up for him.
Yeah, but I was
That's the way, in his mind, he's looking at it, because he doesn't want to take the responsibility then, of what his play his
well,
part
well,
was.
Well, at the end of the meeting, he loses it with her, and then he has a very unique laugh,
mm-hmm.
and it's like a mixture between the Crypt Keeper and, I don't...
It's very maniacal.
And he does it at the end of this meeting, and you're like, okay. And it's just, like I said, the whole setting of the scene was just very surreal because the way that it was shot didn't make any sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I think they did it that way just to kind of show that it wasn't something that happened then. And at that time, it was just him thinking back on a memory. That's why they shot it that way.
I don't know.
Janet finds out that Dr. Anton is back in town. She says she was the one that got him kicked off the board and out of the institute, and she is going to get him kicked. She is going to throw him out of town because he is a very dangerous man, and she does not want him there. And the police are still trying to figure out what's happening with all these missing people. Kim does research about devil worshiping for her article. She goes and buys a video about devil worshiping. I'm sorry. If you really want to know about devil worshiping, I would think she would go to the library and get books about it. But I guess it's just an easier, lazy way to get a video. She didn't actually go purchase the video.
Yeah, her roommate did.
She called her roommate and asked her roommate to go pick it up. I'm sorry, if I'm living with somebody, would you not be freaked out if your roommate called you and say, "Hey, can you go by the video store and pick me up a video about devil worshiping?" Would you not be like, no?
But again, that was another sort of one of those like weird scenes that... So she's sitting in the corner by the phone. Mind you, this is 80s. So there's landlines. So she's sitting by the phone. And if anybody remembers that time and era, we're showing her age at this point now, is that you had like a chair set up next to your landline phone.
Right.
And, you know, so she's sitting by the chair by her landline phone and not across the room or even in this, you know, a different room or something. And she's sitting there and then she jumps when it goes off and she answers it like right away. And she's like, "I was reading my scary novel." And then you're just sort of like, there's the request of, "Can you pick up me a satanic movie?" So I was like, "Yeah, sure, why not?"
No, it wasn't a satanic movie.
Well,
because her roommate said, "You want a movie on devil worshiping?" And she's like, "Yeah, like that's not a weird thing to ask someone for."
Yeah, just
they must have a very peculiar relationship, or maybe her roommate just has a very peculiar interest. I don't know. So anyway,
let's try to flesh out a little bit of that. The roommate thing was sort of weird anyway, because even from the get-go, when she was about to leave, remember she was going to her job and she's like, "You want anything to eat?" And she had like some juice out or whatever. And she's like, "No." And then her roommate's like, "It's too early to start smoking," or something like, it was just sort of like,
she was like, "You look tired. You need to eat something." And she's like, "It's too early to eat." And she went to pull out a cigarette and she was like, "You're just gonna smoke? You need to at least drink some juice." And she's like, "No." I don't know.
It was just a very...
Maybe they've just been friends for a long time, so she's very protective of her. I don't know.
It was just sort of like, okay.
So Jessica and Carl return this afternoon without any bodies, and that is a no-no.
Yeah, Dr. Anton was all sorts of hella pissed.
The doctor didn't have anybody to experiment on. So the doctor explains to them, "If you had followed my instructions to begin with, this would not be an issue. And if you would have made them look like drifters, there wouldn't be anybody looking for them."
Which he does have a good point.
You know, the doctor had told them initially, evidently, it didn't make that aware to us until this point, "Make these people look like drifters.
Or Runaways. I think he was saying Runaways.
No, he said Drifters is what he said. That's why I wrote it down. Make these people look like drifters, you know, so they're not lost. There's nobody looking for them.
Well, and there's that one chick where Carl, they drive up to this chick's house, and she was trying to find her keys, and then Carl beats the crap out of the guy in the front lawn of this neighborhood with a hammer, and then goes into the house, goes down into the basement, and takes the chick. So, yeah. I mean, people are, like, right. starting to freak. I mean, with that one scene, it's like, no wonder why people are freaking out.
Right. So, they're having a harder time finding people because all these people have went missing. So, the cops are looking for a whole bunch of missing people. So, the cops are telling people, you know, be cautious. Don't go out alone. Don't go out after dark. So, yeah. It would be harder to find people when people are being more conscientious. You know,
don't take candy from strangers. Things like that.
So, after this, Janet comes over to run the doctor out of town. Carl hits her upside the head with a 2x4, which is really hilarious.
I didn't even realize that it was Janet. There, you know.
Right. I did, because I seen her in the scene before. Well, she looked a little bit different, because in the scene before, when she was talking to her friend, her hair was down. And in the scene when she comes to the doctor's house, her hair was up. So she did look kindly different. Well, the funny part about it was, I guess, Carl needs brownie points from the doctor. And he was like, I did a good job, doctor. I hit her in the head with a 2x4. Yeah, I'm a good boy. I guess he just needs brownie points. Carl is one of them dudes that needs the brownie points.
That's where the whole scene was hilarious. Because, so they're dragging, they grab Janet. And then they're both taking her in to this very narrow doorway.
Right. It's like a closet in the basement that they hang the bodies in, I guess. Because the doctor's like, put her on the meat hook. And we're like, what?
Well, I was sort of thinking, like, why didn't you just... it's a big house. I mean, if you look from the exterior shots, it's a massive house. So it's like, right. Why didn't you just install, like, a meat cooler? Because you think bodies last longer in a meat cooler.
Right.
That's just me. And and you also have this really, really tiny doorway that even a grown, like, a guy with broad shoulders cannot easily get through.
Well, I think that was probably originally set up in the house for, like, a wine cellar or something. So it's probably cooler in there. And he put some meat hooks in there, I guess, because that's what he said. Put her on the meat hook.
So they're both trying to exit at the same time in this very narrow door. And so they have a Laurel and Hardy sort of like moment, or Three Stooges.
They both get stuck in the doorway at the same time, and they're both like,
you move. No, you move. No, you move.
Yeah. It was a mess.
It was, and it's like, okay, that's sort of funny, but it was just sort of weird with the flow of the movie.
Yeah. The movie is very slow starting out, and then it finally picks up speed. So, that's good, but it still has several moments when the background music supersedes the foreground and what everybody's saying.
And I don't want to say that...
That is awkward.
I don't want to say the movie... The other thing is, don't get discouraged. The movie, I don't think, is not one of those movies that don't have a point. I think it was more, it has a point, but to get there was very schizophrenic on how it got there.
Right. It is slow going.
Well, it's not just slow going, but it shoots off in different directions at the same time. Mm-hmm. So it's, there's parts where you're like, okay, this is sort of hard to follow.
Kim goes by the doctor's house for an interview about his experiments. He asks Jessica to fix them both some sweet tea. And she laces it with the antimonium, which is the drug that the doctor formulated to allow him to soul tangle.
And Kim is just chugging down the sweet tea. I mean, like, she just couldn't...
She acts like, you know, she's been running a marathon outside in the heat, and what she needs is sweet tea.
And she's wearing this sort of, like, weird formal dress that is sort of... with the back cut out, and like an, so it's sort of okay. So she has this meeting with him, and she's drinking the sweet tea, and she's talking to the doctor, and the doctor's like, "Did you not do any research?" You know.
Well, she asked him a lot of personal questions, like, where did you get your degree from? And he's like, this is information that's available, you know, here, here, and here. Why did you not do your research? Why are you asking me personal information? I thought this, the information you wanted to know was about my experiments. You know, and even that information can be found here, here, and here. So why did you not do your research? You're a journalist.
Well, the entire time, he was a condescending prick.
He just rode her hard the whole time he was there.
And also, the weird thing, I noticed this. He has some really weird movements during the entire interview. Like, he would have his chin all the way down on his chest. And then, like, when he was saying stuff, like, it was just, it's something to watch just for some of the weird stuff.
He's very spastic and strange, but he was in the character, man. He was dedicated.
This guy, the guy who did this, if he's still alive and we could ever make a movie, I want him in there.
And she asked him about the rumors of being fired for experimenting on mental and retarded patients. And he ends the interview and makes her leave. Like, he literally has Jessica force her out of the house.
Again, which sort of throws me off because his whole sort of goal was to drug her with this drug.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, get out. And then she's driving down the road. And he's like,
right.
Well, we need to go get her. It's like, dude, you could have just been like, yeah, whatever. Make crap up and be like, she could have passed out at the house. You wouldn't have half the crap that you were going through right now.
Mm-hmm.
Again.
So when she leaves, you find out that Jessica had laced her drink with the Enforium, which has driven others either incurably insane or has killed them. So she drives home and has hallucinations about the institution her father was in, but it's abandoned, and it's surrounded by zombies.
Which never has been mentioned before, except for zombie priest. So you're like, what's up with the zombie thing?
Right. You're trying to figure out where the zombies came from, like they just pulled them out of thin air. I mean, she did have a dream previously that she was out in the middle of nowhere, and this zombie priest came after her. And now she's hallucinating, you assume, because she was driving down the road. And then all of a sudden, she's standing out in front of this institution that her dad was in. And it's all boarded up. And she turns around and she's surrounded by zombies. And you're like, okay.
And then she's like questioning. I was like, I'm at the institution where my father worked at. Like, she's never been there before.
No, her father was at, not worked at.
Well, he was at. And it was like she's never been there before.
Because it was all boarded up and...
I know, but it was like, even as an investigator, even if I would lose somebody, I would definitely try to go there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, she's like... She was sort of like, where am I? Oh, I'm at this institution. It's just sort of like, again, it was just, what is going on? Type situation, you know, in the lives of these people. I don't know.
Right. Well, she wakes up and she's in front of her house on her front lawn.
Propped up against a tree.
Right. Propped up on a tree. She stands up and there's a zombie version of her dad as she's going into her house. Her roommate comes out and says, where have you been? Are you okay? And then the zombie version of her dad rips her roommate's throat out. It's weird. And then she actually really wakes up and her roommate is okay, and she's trying to make sure she's okay, and she stops freaking out. So the doctor has Carl hooked on drugs. You don't find out if it's the Enforium or what it is. I assume it's not the Enforium because he doesn't need him hallucinating to be able to do what he needs him to do.
It's not just Carl, but you don't even know anything about the nurse. You don't know anything about Carl. You don't really even know anything about Anton except for what's going on.
Well, the nurse has been his nurse for years.
So
they have a relationship. Carl evidently has been his assistant before, because the nurse and Carl have a relationship. They've worked together before, because Carl listens to the nurse. And the nurse has the hots for the doctor. So they have a working relationship. But it doesn't really give a lot of background information on them. But Carl goes up to the doctor and says, you got to give me a hit. You got to give me a shot. I need some. I need, you know, he's begging him for drugs. So the doctor goes ahead and gives him some and tells him, you have to bring me back women. Young, healthy women for my experiments.
And then starts beating on the gurney.
Yeah, he freaks out.
Yeah.
The doctor totally loses it because he's like, you need to do this. Because Carl would not leave him alone until he gave him whatever drug he's got him hooked on.
Yeah, and it was just, he's like, turn around. And then he's like, and he grabs his arm and he's like, you know, like, I'm going to do this. And he just sticks him with that needle.
Right.
And it was just this like, and he's like, well, thanks, Doc. And I was like, that was just a really weird interaction type thing. I don't know how to explain that. It was just.
Right. It was strange. I mean, it makes sense. He has to find a way to manipulate him to get him to do what he wants. So he got him hooked on a drug to manipulate.
But we do find out during that whole interaction that the drug that Dr. Antone has made does not work on drugged people. People right. who
ha- It works better on people that aren't drug dependent, that don't have drugs in their system. Because he prefers people that don't have a history of drug use. Yeah. Anyway, that's what he said. So Kim seems okay now and is talking to her policeman friend. Actually, he's maybe a policeman in training. And she's not wanting to report the doctor, but she's wanting to go to his house and stake out and take pictures. So Kim decides the next day to go to the doctor's house alone and take some pictures. Carl sees her, grabs her, and she drops her camera. She does actually tell her roommate that she's going over there, thankfully. So she kicks Carl and runs. She tries to drive off. Carl runs after her and catches her and ties her up in the basement. So it's been several hours and her roommate gets worried and she calls their friend who's a cop in training and tells him to notify the cops too, but he doesn't. Why are these people not doing the smart thing? What is wrong with the world? And so the roommate and the cop in training friend head over to the doctor's house to try to figure out what's going on. Kim gets free of her restraints and her friends get to the doctor's house. So everybody's loose again. The doctor finds Kim and explains that he knows now why he knows her last name.
Which is weird because it took him this long to put two and two together.
Right.
You know, not only is she a reporter, and he didn't do his research on who she was. And she's published in this, I'm taking a local newspaper or right. rag or whatever they call it. And, you know, he's like, now I know who you are. And it's like.
So, yeah, the doctor didn't do his research. So the doctor tells her, I know who you are. I know why your name is familiar. Because your father was one of my first patients. And he survived his first dose of Anforium.
Which we learn more about this Anforium thing. It takes two doses. And most people don't survive the first.
Most people do not survive the first dose. Your father did. And it didn't make him totally crazy. But the second one, unfortunately... Yeah, that killed him. So unfortunate. Because, you know, he did so great with the first one. And the doctor says, well, let's see how you do with the second dose, because you've already had one. Maybe you'll fare better than your father did.
So, and then the entire time, he is shaking the crap out of her. Like, just, I mean, she's getting shaken bitch syndrome. I mean, it's just, he's going at it. Her big old hair just banging back and forth. And it's like, calm down, man. You might kill her just by shaking her.
So, just in the nick of time to prevent Jessica from giving Kim that injection, Kim's cop friend comes in the room.
And he's a squirrely little fella with a gun.
So the doctor does his soul tangling thing, and this is when you really get to see what this is all about.
This is the best part of the movie.
Yep. This is when you really get to see what's what. So the doctor inhabits the body of a guy who is falling apart. I mean, the dude's barely holding together.
So that's why we said fresh is a very loose term.
Not so fresh.
Well, at one point, he tells the nurse to spray down one of the corpses in the corner of that. And so she grabs like a can of Lysol.
No, he doesn't say spray it down. He says, take care of the smell in this room. And she takes a can of aerosol freshener spray and literally goes up to the corpse and sprays it down with some kind of aerosoled air freshener spray. Literally,
Lysol.
Sprays it on the corpse. I'm like, what's that gonna do? It's a rotting corpse. I'll just spray it down with some Febreze. Okay.
It's gonna give it that nice, fresh cotton smell. It's Lysol for dead things.
I don't think they even had that back then, but
Lysol has been around since like 1950.
I don't think they had it in cotton fragrance then, though.
Okay, so it's going to have that sterile Lysol smell that we all love.
They might have had lemon.
Yeah.
Lemon for when things smell like death.
Smells like death and lemon in here.
So the doctor in the not-so-fresh body chokes the officer in training with his intestines.
Yes.
That was fun to see.
And he also, in that one, his biggest thing was the tongue. He was like, he had the intestines and the tongue. He's like, and the entire time he was like running around.
So Kim figures out you have to damage the eyes of the zombies so the doctor can't use those bodies. Because of an old book that her friend found in his grandmother's attic that said the eyes are the window to the soul. So that helped her make that connection. So the doctor keeps going into different bodies, which we found absolutely hilarious. So they destroy the eyes in one body and he body hops. He goes, well, I'll get in this one. Next. And he tries to terrorize him in that body and they jab the eyes out in that one, so he goes to the next body.
And this is really when you see where all the money went to on that shoestring budget and how corny all those effects were. I mean, it is the atypical, almost homemade 80s film, horror film. You know, this is when companies were just giving out money to horror films at this point.
But it was absolutely hilarious. This was the best part of the movie, you know. The doctor gets killed essentially, well, twice, because these bodies are already dead, and she makes it to where he can't inhabit them by jabbing the eyeballs out with multiple different things. One of them was two test tubes she jabbed in the eyes. I mean,
yeah.
Whatever she could find that could be jabbed in an eyeball.
Okay,
she put
him in there. This is hilarious too. So the doctor kills Carl with the
I haven't got to that yet. It's right here.
Okay.
Well, one of the corpses only had one eye. And when he inhabited that body, it was really funny because it only had one eye and the eye was like turned to the side or almost turned completely around. So when he inhabited the body, the eye like whipped around to the front and that was pretty interesting.
Wasn't that our Lemony Dead Fresh one?
I think so. And so after she killed him in that, he had no choice but to go back to his body. Well, Carl comes in the room, and he decides he's going to buck up to the doctor, because he's tired. He is tired of being treated poorly, being used by the doctor. So he gives the doctor, an ultimatum, and he comes in there, and he's like, I'm tired of this. You can start treating me right. Well, the doctor decides to give him the chop. Literally.
Yes. And this is hilarious, because he cuts off... And this is the best kill scene in the entire movie.
He literally takes a great big huge
butcher knife.
It's not a butcher knife. It's a
cleaver.
A cleaver, yeah. A great big huge cleaver. And just hacks him right in the neck with it. And his head goes flop right to the side. It's just enough neck left for his head to be on his body.
Yes. And then, so, Carl falls down. Then the doctor... And in the meantime, Kim and Cop Buddy are standing around just going... You know, they're not interacting at all. They're just sort of watching as the doctor and Carl are going at it.
Mm-hmm.
And then the doctor, I think, returns to fighting one of them. I forgot who. And then possesses Carl.
Yep, he inhabits Carl's body.
And then
that is what you need. A body where the head is two strands away from coming off.
And so the cameraman zooms up to the face. And it's just like it's a plastic latex mold face. And it's going... and she takes two test tubes, Kim does, and shoves them in the eye. And they just fill up with blood.
Yeah, it was pretty awesome.
Oh, and we forgot to mention one of the more interesting, not so fresh, dead things, brain slug. We missed brain slug.
Yeah, I forgot about that.
So I give this whole scene a 5 out of 5 death kill.
Yeah, he takes over a head. The doctor does. They pick up the head. The brain falls to the floor. The eyeballs are still attached. And he's moving on the floor, sliding across the floor with just the brain and the eyeballs that are still attached.
It looks like a snail. It looks like a snail.
It looks like SpongeBob's pet, Gary, is just slinking across the floor. It's brain with eyeballs attached. Just whoop, whoop, whoop. You know what they do? They just stepped on it. It sounded like the biggest slug. Just the biggest slug
it sounded
was stepped
like
on.
That.
And I was like, it just made the biggest splat watery noise you could possibly imagine. It was hilarious. Well, they did call the cops this time, I guess. They got some smarts on them. So the cops get there. And one of the cops that came in there just couldn't stop puking.
Well, okay, but we missed, I think, a crucial part in that. So, after all that, the nurse is still alive. And she grabs the gun. And then Kim comes to her. And then she dies, I think. But she has the gun. And she doesn't shoot Kim. Which is weird. Like, I don't know if she was like, crap, safety. You know, and then... So... You assume everybody's dead at this point. The doctor,
Carl's dead.
Carl's definitely dead. Oh, because she pokes out the doctor's eyes. It's how she ends him jumping around is to poke out the doctor's eyes.
Yeah. After they got done fighting the doctor and Carl's body and the brain, as he was fighting the brain, right before he stepped on it, she poked out the doctor's eyes. The nurse...
The nurse, that one was the wild card. That one's like, you don't know sort of what happened. Okay,
I can't remember what happened with the nurse.
I think she just got knocked out.
No. Instead of injecting Kim, Kim's friend injected the nurse with that and...
Oh, okay.
With the medicate, with the drug.
All right, so, and then...
I'm sorry, I totally... spaced out on that one. So the nurse ended up getting injected instead of Kim during the whole struggle situation. And so the nurse is down for the count. She's in La La Land.
But also Kim's friend or roommate is dead also.
Kim's roommate is dead, yes.
So we have a huge body count at this
there's
point.
There's a huge body count.
You know, I think...
So now we're still at the part where the cops come in... to investigate, and there's one of them literally that is just walking through the house, just throwing up everywhere.
Well, and I think his name was actually Kojak, which is, I'm thinking, sort of a nod to Kojak the TV series that was popular? I don't know. But it sounds like Kojak can't keep throwing up. You know, like, that's the only cop that they named.
Right. And the cops outside are talking about this dude throwing up and how big of a mess it is and everything. And evidently, everywhere this dude, you see this guy, you know which one he is, because he can't stop hurling. He is just barfing everywhere. And so in the end...
Well, okay. And then so I added some more things.
Mm-hmm.
So they have the corner there. And the corner, they go, so how bad is it down there? And the corner is like, yeah, it's really bad down there. A lot of bodies. Well, I'm going to go eat a sandwich downstairs now. They're going to be cleaning up for a few hours. Like, the most, like, I am so bored out of my skull. Like, we just have, like, 30 bodies down there, but, eh. And you know, in different parts of the K with their eyes poked out. But, right. You know, screw it. Just another day at the office.
I know. And that one cop is behind a bush barfing while he's saying this.
I mean, he might as well be just going, hey, you want to get some lasagna later? You know, just...
I bet that coroner could look at that dude barfing behind the bush and just be eating. He don't care. He's just like, whatever,
that,
dude.
That guy, he's seen some shit. You know,
he's like, that coroner's just like, whatever, dude. Blood and guts, I'm eating my sandwich. Whatever,
and then the
dude.
Chief shows up and he's like yelling. He's like, Kojak, stop throwing up. And he's just like, you know. He's like, patrolman, what's going on? And he reiterates the same thing. He's like, there's a lot of bodies down there. You know, and it's just like, well, how long is it going to take? A few hours?
It's going to take hours. It's going to take several hours because there's so many of them.
And they're like, let's not leak this to the press. And we're just sitting there going, yeah, tell that to the chick that writes the newspaper.
There's a lady from the newspaper that's involved. Good luck. Yeah. She already has the story. She was involved in it. Good luck with that. So to wrap it up, in the end, Kim gets her spot on the paper. Her friend, the cop guy, becomes an actual cop. The crazy nurse goes to the nut house, and the doctor is dead. The doctor...
No. Well, see,
and Carl is dead.
Well, okay. But I have a theory. So she got her eyes poked out, right? It looked like, you know, they had it bandaged up. Her eyes were... But they were glowing at the same time. Or there was, like, the... It was... They're red.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if it was blood or what. So here's a theory that the doctor's actually in the nurse's body. Because after that whole scene, at the end, it was like a split second. Kim, the cop doctor, and the nurse all sort of stood up and were like, whew. So, you want to go Fazoli's? Mm. You know? They sort of like, it was like that buddy moment, like, what a day.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it was just, but I mean, the nurse even stood up. So, my theory is that the doctor's not dead. He inhabited the nurse. Who's sort of stuck now because she's now blinded.
Mm.
Because I think he inhabits the last body.
It's possible.
I like that theory better than the doctor died because, I mean, he's such a...
Well, in theory, he did.
With the way that they ended, they're like, you know, they closed up on the nurse's face and it's like, ah! You know, it's like...
Well, in theory, the doctor died because, you know, that's how it was supposed to be portrayed because she poked his eyes out when he was in another body, so he couldn't return to his body, but he could have been in the nurse's body, so they left it in the air and they haven't made another one since, you know.
Well, you know, if that's true, the nurse finally got what she wanted.
Oh, yeah. She really has him inside her. Creepy. Yep, so that was the movie, and you can let us know if you watch it, if you find it enjoyable. I personally give it a 3.5 out of 5 rating, and that's mainly because it had a little bit of a slow start and the background music was atrociously loud in several parts and you just couldn't hear what the actors were saying, and I found that very obnoxious. How about you?
I give it a 4 out of 5. This is actually one of my top favorite really bad horror films.
I did enjoy it for the most part, but My eardrums didn't like it.
Well, I loved how when I've watched this movie 3 times.
I watched it twice.
Yes. So I've watched it 3 times. When I first watched it, you were doing something. And I was watching it. And I was sitting there going, I don't know if this is an actual 80s film or this is an 80s or like a modern day film that's 80s inspired. A homage mm-hmm. to the 80s.
Yeah.
Because it had every 80s cliche in it. It had the 80s car, which was a gremlin. It had the 80s hair.
Mm-hmm.
It had the 80s clothes. It had the bad acting. It had the horrible it had the horrible music. It had the really out of whack, sound.
Bright colors.
Watery blood that was almost pink in some places.
Mm-hmm.
Just everything was horrible about it. That was so reminiscent of the 80s. Cheap horror films. And you're like sitting there going, I don't know if this is a legit horror film or this is homage. Just the way, because it was.
Right.
And then I watched it again. And I was like, okay, this is actually... And I looked at the actual date. And I was like, this is an 80s film, obviously. But, I mean, it was just so... It's one of those, rare... classical movies, in my opinion. This is definitely one I want to add to the collection. It's just so odd. Everything about it, from the music choice, the rock band pipes, to the weird gore-esque punk.
Mm-hmm.
I
enjoyed the music. I just thought it was
loud. But I'm saying the music itself was schizophrenic. Right. It didn't.
It definitely did mesh very well with the film, but. It was just too loud.
Yeah. Well, again, that's such an 80s thing, though, on the cheap stuff, because you couldn't, now we can, we're sitting in our apartment on our computer filming. I can go in here and change things around. Where back then, you had to have somebody who was an expert in audio to do it.
Yeah.
So you're looking at probably a bunch of college students or post-college students who are doing this. And so they don't have that experience, so things are going to be out of whack.
Well, I don't know about you guys, but I am looking forward to October and our Halloween collection. That is what I'm looking forward to.
Yes. I definitely do think this is one movie that we might do a commentary, we actually watch and say stuff during, sort of, an MSTK 3000 thing.
Maybe.
Definitely, if you guys want to hear that, comment below or follow us on Twitter, VidMe, Podbean, Yelp. We're not on Yelp.
Nope.
We're not a restaurant.
Nope. No food here.
Any other things that I can think of? I think we have a Reddit now. But definitely Twitter and Facebook, I think. And then, obviously, YouTube. Yep. And VidMe.
Well, we appreciate you guys. And if you would like and subscribe to hear more, we do terror news and scary stories. And...
sometimes commentary.
Yep.
And then we do these. So, we've got a lot going on. And I think we're finally getting into our groove now. So,
if you have any videos that you would like us to watch... and give our opinion on, just let us know. We are always looking for new really bad horror films, surprisingly enough, even though we have a ton and we watch a ton. But we would like to be informed of any that we haven't heard of before.
Well, and I think that our speculation is, the only speculation that we have about those is it can't be like Jason Takes Manhattan. Everybody does those. We want to find the rare films.
We like the ones that people don't really know about, the really obscure ones.
Think Manos, The Hands of Fate.
Oh, goodness.
Okay.
That will probably be one we do at one time, unfortunately.
Oh, it's great.
Sure.
Dorgo. All right, we'll scare you later.
We'll scare you guys later.
Bye.